On Capitol Hill today, William G. Meyer's nomination as a judge on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals went before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Meyer's is one of the 10 nominees blocked by Democratic filibusters in the Senate in President Bush's first term, and one of 7 the president renominated last month. This time, some in the Republican majority vow that another filibuster attempt will be ruled out of order, which means that this and subsequent judicial nominees would need a simple majority, 51 votes, instead of the 60 votes that are currently needed to cut off a filibuster. If that happens, Democrats in the Senate vow to slow the business of the Senate to a crawl. You can begin to understand why many are calling this the nuclear option. The man in the center of this brewing storm is Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, the new chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. If you have questions about the issues surrounding the confirmation of federal judges, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Senator Specter joins us now by phone from his office on Capitol Hill, and it's nice to have you on the program again, Senator.
Well, nice to be with you, Neil. We are trying to move through the confirmation process to avoid the so-called constitutional or nuclear option, where there would be a change in the rules to permit confirmation without going to 60 votes to have cloture, which means to cut off debate. We have a tough situation which got started about 20 years ago during the last 2 years of President Reagan and the 4 years of President Bush the First. The Democrats slowed down the Republican judicial nominees, and then during 6 years of President Clinton, we Republicans reciprocated and escalated the matter, and then in an unprecedented way, the Democrats turned to a filibuster recently, and we ratcheted up even one step higher with the interim appointment. So now you have a situation where nobody wants to back down. Now, I've taken the first nominee, William Myers, as you noted. I count 58 votes for him on cloture to cut off debate, and I think there are a lot of senators on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, who would like to avoid this confrontation, and as I've said, I'm going to use every ounce of my energy to try to work it out in a compromise fashion.
And if you could rustle up those two other votes, this would be a confirmation that would go ahead without either side having to resort to the next step in the escalation.
That's right. As I said when I concluded the hearing this morning, what I wanted to do was to show that William Myers is a respectable choice for the Court of Appeals, not to get caught up in this web of political wrangling. There have been people who have opposed him, saying that he's not sufficiently in favor of environmental protection. And I think we are able to point out that although there are many things you can cite and statements he's made in a long career which are on one side, there are many, many on the other side. And I want to persuade some more Democrats that it's respectable to vote for William Myers and to try to get him confirmed. It would be a big first step on cooling down the tempers on the Senate floor.
Mm-hmm. Is part of the problem that because of this escalating partisan warfare, as you mentioned, been going on for quite a while, because of this, it's even difficult to get into the actual qualifications of nominees.
Well, that's right. What we had today was going into a lot of his specific statements. We didn't talk about his academic record or about his a professional record, except to the extent that we touched on what he had done as a solicitor for the Department of the Interior. But he's an able man. And I asked him the question, notwithstanding any personal views you may have, are you prepared to give a firm commitment to this committee and the Senate and the American people that you'll follow the law and that you'll put aside any personal predilections you have? Listen, it happens all the time. You have people with long records, and they mm-hmm. come in, and they've said things which don't look too good in cold print. And then they take the bench, and they follow the law. They observe the law, and they become very, very fine judges.
Yet, of course, federal judges, for good reasons, certainly it's in the Constitution, if that's not a good enough reason, but they're appointed for life. This is an important decision.
Well, of course, it's a very important position, and life tenure is very important to establish in their independence. But when you're a circuit judge, you're decisions are subject to review by the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, the Supreme Court doesn't hear too many cases, but a circuit judge is also bound by his oath to uphold the Constitution and the decisions which have come down, and the judges don't stray from what the Supreme Court has handed down. You have a lot of controversy on Roe versus Wade, and I, as you may know, believe in a woman's right to choose. And you have some nominees who have said some pretty extreme things on personal views. They come to the bench, and they follow the Supreme Court because that's the law.
And they don't have a choice about that, do they?
Well, that's right. There is no choice. If they are to observe their oath of office, to fly in the face of a Supreme Court decision, subjects you to a lot of criticism, and then off to being overruled. So, the judges sit in three judge panels. One judge doesn't make the decision, and then there's a review by the full court en banc. If a 2-1 decision is not in accordance with the balance of the court, they may sit 8 or 10 more judges, and the rule of law is carried out, and the personal predilections of individuals are not, as pretty much a generalized rule in our judicial system. That's what makes us so strong as a democracy, and what makes us the proud possessors of being champions of the rule of law. We're the envy of the world on that.
You mentioned abortion. How much is Roe v. Wade and the possibility of Supreme Court vacancies, how much of that is driving this controversy?
Well, that's in the background. We all hope that Chief Justice Rehnquist beats his battle with cancer, and I'm hopeful that he will be able to sit until the spring where you can have an orderly transition. But if we were to have a vacancy and there were to be a filibuster of a Supreme Court nominee and you had 4-4 decisions, you would be rendering inoperative the Supreme Court, and it would be really disastrous for our judicial system, and we do not want that to happen.
Let's get some callers involved in the conversation. If you'd like to join us, we're speaking with Senator Arlen Specter, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Our number is 800-989-8255. You can email questions, TOTN@npr.org. Lori's with us from San Jose, California.
Yes, Senator Specter, thank you for taking my call.
Hello, Lori. Nice talking to you.
I do have, I'd like a little more explanation or clarity on the decision by the Republican majority to change the filibuster rules to a simple majority. I find the idea of changing the rules if it doesn't go our way kind of puzzling.
The approach is that the 60 votes to have cloture, which means to cut off debate, applies only to legislation, and that it was never intended to apply to the confirmation of judges, and that the Constitution is explicit in saying that the Senate has the right to confirm judges, but never said that it would take a supermajority. In a lot of positions in the Constitution, you have provisions for a two-thirds vote to override a veto, or a two-thirds vote to convict a president on impeachment, and nothing is said about that. That argument is counterbalanced by the fact that it's never come up before. But of course, the filibuster has never been used until a couple of years ago. So that's
not used in quite this way.
Yeah. Lines.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Have a good day.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you.
Senator Specter, some Republicans, John McCain among them, have said they don't necessarily support the idea of changing it to a simple majority. What's your position?
Well, I have not yet taken a position on it. I'm not going to cross that bridge or really jump off that bridge until I come to it, and I'm using every ounce of my energy to avoid coming to it. And also, as chairman of the Judiciary Committee, I have a lot more leverage if I stay flexible on the point, have a better chance of negotiating with both sides.
So maneuver, drive over to the ferry and avoid the bridge altogether.
Well, that's what I'd like to do. I'd like not to cross that bridge. It's in the interest of America that the Senate avoids crossing that bridge.
Let's talk now with Joel. Joel's on the line from Corvallis, Oregon.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hello, Joel.
Hi there. So if anybody listening to the show is aware that the Republicans are pretty upset that the Democrats have been blocking these nominees, the thing that gets me is that the number of nominees that have been blocked by the Democrats during President Bush's first term, if you look at the number out of the total number of judges who have been put before the Congress, is a very small percentage that they've blocked. And if you compare that with the number that were blocked during President Clinton's terms, it's a much smaller number. And so it almost seems, you know, with the Republicans calling Democrats obstructionists these days by attempting to block these nominations, it seems to me a little like the pot calling the kettle black. Could you comment on that?
Well, I have said publicly that both parties are to blame. I gave you a very short recitation of the history where it got started in the last 2 years of President Reagan, and then it's been exacerbated, ratcheted up by both sides. And I don't think the real issue is the number. The real issue is the use of the filibuster, which has been done for the first time in more than 200 years in the history of the Republic. But once you get into the arguments, it is absolutely unending. And that's why I want to avoid the arguments.
Mm-hmm. So if you think this is a problem that's been ratcheted up by both sides...
That's right. I think both sides bear blame.
Sure. I see that. Could we expect then from you, if we see another Democratic presidential administration in the future, that you might lead the charge to have less contentious battles over these? Do you think that's the way Congress should be working on it?
Absolutely. When President Clinton was in office, I supported Baez and Berzon and others, William Lamb Lee up for Assistant Attorney General in the Civil Rights Division. I've had no hesitancy in backing Democrats, and I believe that judicial selection and confirmation ought to be above the political process. I think the president traditionally has a right ideologically to make selections in his direction. I think that's part of the election process. But I think that there's a wide ambit of the mainstream, and I think it's been vastly overdone in the last 20 years, as I've given you some specificity on.
Joel, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
We're talking about the process by which the United States Senate confirms or does not confirm judicial appointments with the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Arlen Specter. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk now with Rick. Rick's calling from Boise, Idaho.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hello, Rick. Mr. Myers, William Myers, comes from Idaho. He's a Boise lawyer.
Something I'm well aware of, yes.
Okay.
Actually, my question turns more in regards to an interview that I heard recently. It was one of the NPR programs where the guest was asked the question, what's truly at risk for the lack of some of the judges serving in their appointments in the judiciary? And I guess I would emphasize with regard to what's at risk, what is truly at risk to taxpayers, citizens, the judicial process, and really even justice, in terms of having some of the lacking seats, because obviously there are court cases that are backing up and a backlog, but I really didn't hear an answer. I wonder if maybe the guest today had an answer to that question.
Well, the administration of justice is supposed to be swift. There is a statement, which I think is true, justice delayed is justice denied. You have the Sixth Circuit, for example, where there are four vacancies on the circuit, and it has impacted very, very badly, where people are waiting years to have their cases decided. So this is a matter of real importance that these judicial vacancies be filled.
Rick, thank you.
Thank you.
And let's see if we can talk to Jan in Parkville, Missouri.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Jan.
Afternoon, Jan.
Hello, Senator. I just so appreciate your historical presentation of the problem. And although I may have a minority view, I feel like the rancor and the debate and the conflict and the confrontation is, you know, why we have a republic. And I feel like actually it makes us stronger. And I'm satisfied there was well over 120 of Bush's appointments that, you know, the Senate or the Congress you know, successfully put in place, and I think that's just fine. And I like the conflict. I think it does the best for our democracy.
Well, I would respectfully disagree with you. I think healthy debate, robust debate is good, but I think we need to come together as a nation. And I think if what is going on now sets the scene for a contentious Supreme Court nomination, I think that would be really bad for America. We talk a lot about coming together, and we make a fair amount of progress on it, but right now this is a sticking point. So let's debate it, but then let's decide it.
Jan, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Spector, just before we let you go, the Supreme Court today, as you know, struck down the death penalty for juveniles for murders committed before the age of 18. I wanted to get your reaction to that.
Well, I think it is a good decision. It has been a long time in coming, as we have seen so many of the individual states strike down the execution of those under 18. I recall my days as a district attorney of Philadelphia had a celebrated case involving one young man who was 17, and he was at the periphery of the issue. When the matter came up for commutation, I agreed that he ought to serve a life sentence. This is an evolving part of our greater appreciation of what justice requires. And some time ago, the court had said you can't execute 15-year-olds, and now it's been moved to 16 and 17, and I think that makes us a more civil and humane society. I continue to be in favor of the death penalty as a general proposition because I think it is an effective deterrent. I've seen many situations where professional burglars don't want to carry weapons on their burglary for fear they will murder somebody, or you have a prison guard serving a prisoner serving a life sentence, killing a prison guard. So I believe the death penalty is appropriate, but I think the Supreme Court's on solid ground in what it decided today.
Senator Spector, I just wanted to add that all of us wish you the best of luck with your treatments for Hodgkin's disease.
Well, I've got something that's curable, and as I've said, I beat a brain tumor, and I beat...
Arlen Spector of Pennsylvania. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.